This is an ABC podcast.
There's a piece of advice you sometimes hear about visiting pristine natural environments. Leave only footprints, take only pictures. Or if you're a fossil fuel company running an offshore oil rig, it's more like take everything you can and leave all your gear behind once you're done. I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley, and today on The Signal, more than 1,000 oil and gas wells off the Australian coastline are nearing the end of their lives, at which point it will fall to the extractive industries to foot the $50 billion cleanup bill. There's a cheaper alternative, though. For half the price, they can leave everything more or less exactly where it is.
So is this just an elaborate version of ocean dumping, or could it somehow be a win for the environment too? How big is Australia's offshore oil and gas industry, Mikey?
Look, there's about 2,000 people employed directly in offshore oil and gas, and that's been going down over time.
This is Mikey Slezak. He's the ABC's science and environment reporter.
And it's been shrinking particularly as a kind of percentage of the overall sector, but it has been shrinking overall as well over time, partly because some of our oil resources are depleting and there are other ways of getting oil and gas.
So as a result, there are now all these oil and gas wells off Australia's coast that are nearing the end of their lives, which means the rigs and anything else attached to them will need to be disposed of before too long.
Over the next 50 or so years, it's estimated there are about 1,000 wells, but that 1,000 well is serviced by a much smaller number of platforms that kind of suck the oil out of them, right? So we've got about 1,000 wells that are going to come to the end of their life, serviced by about 70 platforms. So those can either be the kind of traditional oil rigs you'd see in kind of movies like Deepwater Horizon and stuff that are kind of built onto the seafloor, or these floating rigs that look more like large ships that are then attached to infrastructure that's attached to the seafloor.
What is the best practice for decommissioning a rig?
Well, the default in Australia and most places is you've just got to remove everything there. You have to return the environment back to as close as what it was prior to when the work began. So that means, you know, if that's a rig that's attached to the seafloor, pulling it out and disposing of it on land. And then the pipelines have to go. There are allowances for some things that are just too big, too hard, or too dangerous to move. Sometimes that's like giant concrete blocks that are on the bottom of the sea. Generally, you can leave some of those structures there.
That sounds like it's a pretty difficult and expensive thing to do, removing all that stuff from the ocean.
Yeah, it's massive. If you're talking about 70 platforms, maybe it doesn't sound huge, but between the wells, we've got about 5,000 kilometres of pipelines running between these offshore wells. It's a massive, massive task. And it's all got to be done. Well, at the moment, the idea is it's all got to be done. Put it all together, the NERA, National Energy Resources Australia, has just recently estimated it'll cost $50 billion to get it all done, and about half of that before 2030. So this is like a massive liability that a declining sector in the fossil fuel industry has on its books that it's basically got to sort out in the coming decades.
So if there's this really high dollar figure attached to removing all this hardware, is there an alternative?
Yeah, well, I mean, the alternative is not removing them. So, you know, this decommissioning process by default involves removing them. But the industry now reckons it can save a lot of money by doing what it calls in situ decommissioning. So it basically means switching them off and leaving a whole bunch of the infrastructure where it is in the ocean. They reckon if they did that with like most of the infrastructure, it would save them about half of that $50 billion figure.
Right, so that is a $25 billion saving.
Yeah, tempting, right?
Very. But presumably, this is not a great option for the environment?
Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you? But there is an honest-to-God debate about this.
Yeah, look, it does just sound like dumping trash in the ocean. And look, I mean, to some extent, that's undeniably the kind of objective case, right? Mm. This is stuff that the industry doesn't need anymore. They don't have to take it out and put it on land. They want to leave it where it is. But look, it's not quite as simple as that. The key thing that complicates this question is that these oil rigs often actually have these really complex structures in what's often otherwise a relatively featureless seafloor. And the thing is, in sea creatures actually really love complex structures, right? So these things sit there for decades and they become completely covered in marine life. You know, oysters, mussels, corals if they're in the right location, and then fish flock to them, and then seals and sharks flock to them to eat the fish. And so they become these really complex ecosystems. So for instance, Professor Peter McCready from Deakin University studies this stuff, and he calls them underwater oases.
You know, just to give you some sense of scale, I mean, they have a footprint that's the size of a football field, and they stand as high as the Eiffel Tower, some even exceed that height. And they're a bit like high-rise accommodation, high-rise apartment buildings, you know, just full of corals, mussels, fish, sponges, marine mammals, and so on. And I don't want to give the impression that they're all like that. They're not all like that. But the ones that are like that, providing that really important habitat for marine life, we're in this difficult situation of deciding whether to remove those oases or whether to leave them in place as artificial reefs.
It strikes me that this is an environmental argument that really serves the fossil fuel industry, you know, has the potential to save the industry as a whole billions, many billions of dollars. Is that conclusion contested in any way at all, that it is a universal good for these rigs to stay out there and remain as homes for sea life?
Yeah, look, it really is. It is contested. I spoke to Professor David Booth, who is at UTS University in Sydney. He was actually Professor McCready's supervisor, studying the same issues for a little bit longer. He says it can be a little bit simplistic to see all the marine life around these rigs and conclude that it's necessarily helping the environment.
And you see a lot of fish there. The instant thing people think is, oh, that's got to be a good thing. But in many cases, and it's very rarely been proven that there's fish produced there, for instance. We've done a little bit of work showing this for some species, but it could well be that those rigs, which might be located near natural areas, are drawing fish off to there where they might be more easily caught or damaged. So this whole debate about whether their production of fish occurs there or attraction is pretty unresolved at this stage.
The second big question is, are the fish that are around these rigs the fish that you want? As in, are they natural to that environment, or are they invasive species? And again, this is not something that's very well studied. And along with all of it too, some of these rigs and other infrastructure could contain pollutants that could be toxic to the environment. So these are all things that need to be studied, and it does leave the question somewhat open.
And as you can imagine, conservationists have their reservations about this too. Nathaniel Pelle is from the Australian Conservation Foundation.
If you have ever seen a plastic bottle or a shopping trolley sitting at the bottom of the harbour, you'll find some mollusks attached to it. And, you know, those are life forms that are living there. But we wouldn't say that that means any structure that you dump in the ocean that gets life attached to it is overall good for the environment. No one's really ever studied the whole of ecosystem impacts of dumping these kinds of things en masse around the coastline.
So those are the basics of the debate. And it is about to come to a head in Australia because there's one company, Woodside, that really wants to leave its infrastructure in the ocean. And like we said, there are a bunch of other rigs in the queue for decommissioning behind this one.
In 2006, Woodside started extracting oil off the coast of West Australia from this well using what it called the Niangra floating oil platform. So it's like a big ship, basically, and it processes oil before it gets transported elsewhere. And at one end of this rig is what's called a riser turret mooring, or RTM. It kind of looks like a rocket ship. It's 85 metres long and about 12 metres wide, and it extends from the surface of the water where the ship is right down to near the seafloor. And basically, the pipes run through it that kind of extract the oil from below the seafloor. So this 85 metre long kind of rocket looking structure that's sitting in the water, at the bottom of it, Woodside filled it with this mud, which is actually iron ore slurry to like weigh it down so that it sits vertically. And when oil stopped flowing in 2018, the plan was to simply empty that compartment at the bottom that was filled with all this mud so that they could float it on its side, like it floats back up to the surface on its side, drag it to the shore and recycle it. And that was always the plan.
But as is so often the way, the original plan did not come off.
Woodside said, you know, through design mistakes and failures to properly maintain it, that compartment with all that mud in the bottom can't be emptied. Since they can't then empty that, they can't float it up to the surface and then towing it to the shore, they say is no longer practicable. So Woodside came up with a new plan, which was to drag it a little bit towards the shore, actually closer to Ningaloo Reef's World Heritage Area, and then sink it. So they would fill the rest of it with water, sink it down to the bottom of the ocean, and then they'd attach 49 concrete modules to it. And then all that stuff would become inhabited by sea creatures, they say, and it would be what they call an integrated artificial reef. And they've actually collaborated with Wreckfish West, a recreational fishing group there. And the idea is that they can have a field day, right? You get this stuff there that either attracts fish from elsewhere or produces them. And then wreckfishers come along and yank them out.
So this is what's known in the industry as a rig-to-reef proposal. It's common enough in the world that it has its own name, but it would be the first commercial instance of the practice in Australia. But that's only one of the reasons Mikey says this plan is being seen as a controversial one.
Yeah, it is controversial. So the plan for this rig-to-reef, they call it, so you're taking something that's part of a rig and turning it into a reef, the plan for that that's been already approved by the regulator but hasn't got all its approvals, the plan involves dumping it along with 65 cubic metres of polyurethane foam that's in there that helped the top of it float. So you have the mud at the bottom sinking it, the foam at the top that helped it float to keep it vertical. The plan that's been approved includes dumping it with all of that in there. They'd kind of encapsulated in what they call a grout, a kind of cement-like material, but they were going to dump that down there. Now, that's raised the eyebrows of the Australian Conservation Foundation, who are concerned about that leaching into the environment. And in fact, the plan says that that will eventually leach into the environment, but perhaps not for centuries.
Okay, so to recap, reason one, there's 65 cubic metres of foam in there, which will eventually seep out. Since then, Woodside has actually changed its plan and it wants to remove the foam, having initially argued that it would be dangerous to do so. The regulator approved the old plan but not the new one, so it's all a bit up in the air, according to Mikey.
Right, and that's not the only controversial element of Woodside's new plan.
It also doesn't have some of the qualities that, you know, that make other rig-to-reef proposals normally seem so attractive at face value. So, you know, when you think about these big structures that have been sitting in the ocean for 30 years, encrusted in sea life, and you just leave them where they are, you can kind of see some attraction to that because they've become this reef and you're just leaving it there. But this actually is being removed from where it is, completely cleaned up and altered, and then dumped in a completely different spot at a completely different depth. So any of the kind of sea life that has grown on it is very unlikely to survive in the new environment. So you're not maintaining this natural reef this artificial reef rather that's developed. You're kind of putting it in a new spot and hoping that it becomes a reef. It's not even an ideal shape for a reef, right? So they have to dump all this concrete along with it to make it an attractive habitat for fish. I spoke to Professor Tina Solomon Hunter from Macquarie University Law School, and she reckons it would be in breach of Australia's legal obligations, both under Australian law and international law. Basically, she says it amounts to sea dumping and we can't do it.
You know, our obligations, both nationally and internationally, is not to dump this sort of detritus in the marine environment, anything from installations and platforms. And in fact, we have an obligation to ensure that the marine environment is not harmed.
Can you tell me about that? What obligations do we have? And what's your view about how this fits with those?
So Australia is signatory to something called the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. We know it as UNCLOS. And there's a general obligation to not pollute the marine environment, and also there's an obligation to preserve the marine environment. And so that has fundamentally been used as this idea that actually we don't leave any structures in the marine environment and that we should leave it.
Okay, so this isn't actually a given yet, like Mikey was saying. It's been approved by the regulator, but not by the Environment Minister. Woodside's application has been received, though, and it's being assessed. A statement from the Minister, Susan Lee's office, says that the Australian government is committed to protecting Australia's oceans, marine species, and marine and world heritage protected areas. Woodside says its Exmouth Deepwater Artificial Reef is expected to provide a range of social, economic, and ecological benefits, with the design and location being optimised with the aim of creating a reef that becomes a productive marine habitat. The statement goes on to say that the company is focused on strong environmental performance.
Right, but Mikey says the fear is that this fight might be much bigger than just one rig.
It's also really controversial because it's one of the first examples we've seen of this in Australia, and conservationists and other experts say it could set quite a significant precedent. That's what Professor Tina Solomon-Hunter thinks. She thinks that, look, if these guys get permission to do it, then every other company will turn around and say, well, why can't I do that as well?
I mean, if the regulator allows this to occur, that a company who's decommissioning can take part of their facility and dump it in the ocean somewhere else, that sets a precedent, because every other license holder is going to look and say, well, this was allowed in this license area, why can't we do it? And that precedent is, it would be a global first in terms of allowing this when there are other options. It is my view that if we allow this sea dumping to occur, then it would really enable other license holders to do the same. And there's no doubt that this is a cheaper option, much cheaper option. But what we have to ask ourselves is it the best option?
That is The Signal for this week. We will be back in your feed on Monday. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. And you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're enjoying the pod.
We'll catch you on Monday. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.